This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. You know the routine. A teacher teaches a concept, students study the concept, then after a project or test, the teacher grades the students. But the coronavirus pandemic forcing remote learning has made what has always been true much more visible. Not every student has access to the same things at home. Why should we keep assessing them in a way that puts them all on the same level? Or is it time to do away with grades completely? Joining us to talk about it is Washington Post national education reporter Mariah Balingit. Mariah, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us, Jack Schneider, an assistant professor of leadership and education at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. Jack, hi.
Pleasure to be here.
So Mariah, what are some of the ways you've seen schools try to assess students during the pandemic?
So I talked to a lot of teachers and students in the fall, and the most common scenario that I found was that teachers basically said, you can raise your grade, but we won't do anything to lower your grade. So even if students, for example, couldn't log on or were working in some cases 35 or 40 hours a week at a grocery store and they couldn't complete all their work, the teachers had this sort of hold harmless policy where they wouldn't lower their grades, but they did give the opportunity to kids to raise their grades. So that was sort of the most common scenario that I found. But moving into the new school year, I think there's still a lot of questions as to what schools will do.
Well, I know some schools moved to a pass-fail system. Some stuck with grades. Some let students choose how they were going to be assessed. What went into that decision-making process?
Well, I think that this pandemic, and this is true in so many facets of our society and in our life, the pandemic has really exposed some pretty stark disparities between how kids live and learn. Some kids don't have access to good internet or any internet at all. Some kids are living in really disruptive home environments. In San Antonio, for example, the superintendent was dropping in on some of these Zoom classes, and he noticed that kids were often learning in living rooms where there were like other kids running around or it was very noisy. So he had to make the decision to purchase headphones for all the kids in the district so that they could learn better. So again, it just seemed deeply unfair. And they also knew that kids were going through a lot of trauma. This is sort of a collective trauma for everybody, really. And they wanted to take that into account. And I think one of the last things that I heard is that teachers really wanted to focus on students' emotional health first and foremost before trying to, you know, get them to catch up, get them to stick closely to a curricula. That to them was sort of the most important things in many cases.
Jack, what are grades supposed to do for students, parents, and teachers?
It's a really good question, and it's one that we don't often ask because we take them for granted. You know, grades are a part of what David Tyack and Larry Cuban call the grammar of schooling, right? Just the everyday nature of school that makes it seem like a real school to us, right? Desks, blackboards, grades, homework, a teacher in front of the classroom. But if we really think about grades, it's clear that they're serving multiple purposes at the same time, and that's a big part of the problem with grades. Historically, we can see that grades evolved through a sort of non-singular invention process, right? There wasn't one person who invented grades and the report card with, you know, a clear sense of why they would matter and why all schools should adopt them. Instead, we saw grades emerge for three real reasons. One was to motivate students. And well before letter grades, there were all sorts of prizes and awards dating back as far as we have written records about schools and colleges and universities to motivate students to work harder. So that's one reason. A second is to communicate with families about the progress that students are making. So especially as we moved to what is today the public education system, you know, through the 19th century, as schools began to expand, schooling moved out of the home. It became a more formal affair. And increasingly, students were learning things in school that their parents couldn't really help them with. Many parents listening right now probably can relate to that. And so grades became a way of communicating to parents, as well as to students, how well students were doing in the school curriculum. And then there's a final piece, which is about stitching together our kind of non-system that we have in the United States. We refer to the public education system, but of course, we have a pretty decentralized system in the United States that really doesn't effectively function as a system. We have schools within districts, within states. The federal government has some powers, but not tremendous powers. There's no central ministry of education. And then colleges and universities operate independently from the K-12 system. So grades enable some coordination, some connectivity between each level of this system as well as across places.
Do you think those three motivators behind grades, motivating kids, communicating with families, stitching together this non-system that we have, that it's shaped or impacted the way we think about what schools are supposed to do?
Well, I think to some extent, right, that insofar as grades stitch together this non-system, let's just think about that, where they are lodged permanently in a transcript, right? That the report card, the transcript, is a permanent document that travels with students across place and time. Well, that certainly is going to shape the nature of what we think schools do, because right now, so many of us see schools as places where students acquire credentials, right? Where they gather together these tokens to be spent on future social or economic privilege. That absolutely is a product of the fact that report cards enable that kind of behavior. Let's look also at the fact that for many people, school is a drag, right? The only reason to work hard is because you fear the F and want the A. When Oregon moved towards pass-fail during the pandemic, many parents signed a petition, thousands of them, in fact, and commented, why on earth would my student work hard if he or she isn't being graded? And so we can see that grades are impacting the nature of our perception of how school should be, because students are working for an extrinsic reward, the grade, rather than for the intrinsic reward of actually learning something that matters. So grades absolutely shape the way we feel about school, the way we experience school, and the way we understand the purpose of school.
Well, Leah called us from Toledo, Ohio. She's a teacher, and she told us about her school district's approach last spring.
On one hand, I feel like it was fair, but not really, because I did have students that did absolutely nothing because they knew that we averaged our first three quarters to give them a grade as well as the spring. I do understand this is different, so I wasn't too mad about it, but I'm hoping when we go back online in the fall, we do regular letter grades to get the kids to be motivated to do the work.
So Leah, there speaking to one of the things you outlined, Jack, motivation and a way to get students to be engaged. But we also got this tweet from Doris who says, I believe that grades are used to compare one student to another. They should not be used as what ends up being an arbitrary measurement of what someone knows. A listener from the 1A Text Club wrote, grades don't tell the whole story. At my high school in St. John's, Michigan, it was your attendance that held enormous weight. You could be a D student and an athlete and have a relatively normal time in school. But if you were not an athlete and skipped too many classes, you were sent to alternative ed, where your education basically stopped. Another member of the 1A Text Club offers this suggestion for grading. It would be good to add a letter or number for effort, as well as at least a few sentences explaining where the student is and his or her progress. Coming up, we'll ask two high school students their thoughts on grading, and the answers might surprise you. I'm Jen White. We'll talk more in a moment. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor WNYC Studios, presenting the podcast Come Through with cultural critic Rebecca Carroll. Carroll explores the role of race in the issues the nation faces and what it all means for the 2020 elections and the nation's future. She speaks with guests about whether the burden of white fragility is often unduly placed on people of color, how the coronavirus is affecting Black communities, and if faith is enough to sustain us at this time. Come Through with Rebecca Carroll, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Hey parents, Mindy here from Wow in the World, NPR's podcast for all ages. With schools out, we are all looking for fun ways to educate and entertain our kids. Wow in the World has over 100 science-filled, screen-free episodes to help them laugh and learn. It's like a cartoon for their brains. Wow in the World from Tinkercast and NPR.
I'm Jen White. We're discussing how to assess students during a pandemic as part of our education series, Homeworked. All this week, we're looking at how schools are reopening, how parents are turning to homeschooling in pods, and how students with disabilities are faring with remote instruction. Now, especially for students who are headed to college, the stakes are high, so we wanted to check in with a couple of students. Ryan Arruda is a rising high school sophomore in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And Gabriella Holzer is a rising senior from Hyattsville, Maryland. Gabby, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So I want both of you to describe what the last few months of school, what they were like for you. Ryan, I'll let you go first.
Well, the last few months of school, I have to say, it's nothing I've ever experienced in my life. Never did I think this would ever come, but we turned from all in class to completely remote learning, and it was just very crazy that this happened, but we transferred completely online. We used the applications online, and for me, it worked very well. I know for some other people it didn't, but overall, I think it was a very good experience.
Gabby, what about for you, especially, you know, having the year in the way it did and heading into your senior year and knowing things may not look the way you expected?
Yeah, sure. So my school district decided to go pass-fail grades-wise, and everything was online, and you kind of did things on your own timeline, and as long as everything was turned in by the end of the year, you would get your grade. And it was all based on completion, which was kind of throwing a wrench in this system that, I don't know, we've been used to for so long, but because of the unprecedented circumstances, everything changes, right? And it was definitely kind of anxiety-inducing, considering the fact that I'm going into my senior year, and they say that junior year grades play such a huge role in your college admissions, right? And the whole GPA and comparing yourself to other students and what are other counties doing. So it was definitely nerve-wracking because we don't know what colleges are going to be looking at anymore. And it took some time to adjust to, but in the end, it was okay.
Ryan, for your district, how did the evaluation process work for you? Did you have some anxiety around it like Gabby's describing?
Oh, 100%. So like Gabby, we also took on the pass and fail, and it was all based on completion. But instead of having one assignment per week, it was three assignments per week, and you had to complete two out of the three. But I have to say, even as a freshman student just entering high school, I was very stressed out, as you think it would be week to week, the days that it would be due, but work was due every day, and my schedule was just very, very crazy, and I definitely did have a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I'm just happy that we completed this, and I hope this next school year they kind of fix that.
Well, we got this tweet. It says, grades provide a mechanism to hold students accountable. Otherwise, students wouldn't have an incentive to perform at expected levels. Moreover, students must be taught that challenging times occur, but we're still expected to keep moving forward in a different way. Gabby, what do you think about that? Do grades incentivize you and the kids you're in school with?
I definitely do think that grades are a big motivator. I saw a lot of people at school, once they heard pass-fail, they were like, okay, well, you know, I can just do the bare minimum and slide by, which with everyone having different circumstances at home, you know, some people were going through things, is totally understandable. But I do think that grades act as a way to motivate kids to continue learning and to keep understanding things, and it's a little harder to be self-motivated.
Ryan, what do you think about this argument that we should rely less on grades or get rid of them completely?
Well, I think that grades, they are an incentivizer for me, but to get rid of them completely, I'm kind of on the fence for it, because I understand the reason why we have grades, but I do think that if a student were to get a bad grade, they'd get very, you know, upset over it. So the argument is very 50-50, but I do believe that there's more pros for just getting rid of grades.
Gabby, I know you're getting ready to apply to colleges, and a transcript is a huge part of that process. What would it mean for you to move away from grades as a way of showing student progress?
I definitely think that moving into the age where colleges like to boast about their holistic admission, I would personally prefer to get rid of grades, because what are some of the alternatives, like teacher evaluations, things like that? I feel like give other people and the student themselves a better idea of how they are as a student besides just the quantitative evaluation. And I think that moving away from grades and moving towards something more qualitative would benefit a lot of people.
Well, we got this from our 1A text club. It says, the tests that are administered to students are only one piece of the puzzle. Compare you to you. It won't matter 40 years from now if you got an A or a C in any given subject. The question might instead be, did you learn anything and do you still have a zest to continue learning? Gabby, I know that national tests are a big piece of this puzzle, too, as you apply to colleges. A lot of colleges waive the application requirement for the SAT and ACT this year. Many students were forced to take big tests like the various AP exams, those are advanced placement exams, at home. You were taking a few AP classes last year. What was it like to take that test at home?
Yeah, it was really difficult. And I would say probably my least favorite part of how the whole everything changed, because the tests this year were condensed into 45-minute exams where, depending on the class, you would either write one essay in those 45 minutes or have two multi-part questions. And I feel that it wasn't a good way to measure your knowledge of the entire subject, because you're condensing one entire year into a 45-minute test when it would have normally been, what, like 3.5 hours. So I personally, and I know that a lot of other people, didn't perform as well as they had hoped just because it was so different. And yeah.
That's Gabby Holzer. She's a rising high school senior from Hyattsville, Maryland, and Ryan Aruda, a rising sophomore from Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Ryan, Gabby, thanks so much for speaking with us, and best of luck this fall.
Thank you.
And still with us to talk about testing and grading is Professor Jack Schneider of the University of Massachusetts at Lowell and reporter Mariah Balingit of The Washington Post. And we want to bring another voice into this conversation. Tangi Reed Marshall is the director of preschool through 12th grade practice at the Education Trust. That's an advocacy organization working on behalf of low-income students and students of color. Tangi, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So what does the research we have say about the best ways to measure student progress?
There are a lot of different ways to measure student progress. And, you know, as been said earlier, there's no one exact way. We need a series of multiple measures, both holistic as well as quantitative, to get a sense of what kids know and are being asked and are able to do. So we need a wide range of mechanisms and structures by which to gain knowledge about what students learn, what students know, and how we can best support them as they move forward in their progression and their trajectory in school learning.
We got this message from Chris on our Facebook page, who says, no grades are not unfair. You get the grade you work for. Stop trying to lower every standard to the lowest common denominator. Jack, your response?
Well, you know, certainly there is complaining from people who get low grades. And there's something to be said for a system in which you get what you deserve. But unfortunately, there's too much evidence right now that students don't really get what they deserve, at least in terms of what they know and can do. And so, you know, one modest proposal would be to put together portfolios of student work where we actually looked at what students know and can do, and the incentive for students was actually to learn things and to develop their capacities in particular academic subject areas. Right now, so often, right, grades reward students who are willing to burn themselves out, students who are willing to endlessly stare at their textbooks, students who have really good test preparation programs at home or lots of pressure at home. I'm not sure any of those things are particularly meretricious. But, you know, if we want to move to a system where we say, actually, this really does reflect what you can do, that's within our power. It just requires us to think a little bit more critically about a system that we've lived with for so many generations that we tend not to question it.
Yeah, I think it also, we have to ask ourselves some deeper questions about what we're trying to get at for kids and what this means about grades. We say that grades are also commodities, so they measure, as Mr. Snyder said, outside and external factors years, and sometimes they measure what kids have as opposed to what they can do. And so we've got to decide that grades are about learning so we can support kids to get them to know what they need to do better in school and better in life, you know, overall. But it's not just one mechanized way of getting kids to perform. And we have to decide that grades can be used as tools to help us learn about students.
Mariah, I think you were trying to jump in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this tension between this idea that grades should be used as tools to actually evaluate where students are. And, you know, in covering education, having been a student, I didn't really realize this, but having covered education, you know, teachers are using a variety of ways now to evaluate, are my students learning? And if they're not learning, how do I, like, what subjects do I need to go back over? But there's this real tension between using this as a tool, but then also using it as a way to determine whether a student is worthy of higher education. You can't, like, that doesn't quite work, because if the student, it seems a little unfair to be doing that. If the student is not learning, that could be the fault of the system, not of the student. And if they're being punished for not learning when the system is not adequately instructing them, then they're also going to be punished later down the line.
Well, we got this email from a teacher who says, I always think of grades as the grade for me, the teacher, not the student, for the teaching, not the learning. A good grade means I'm providing whatever the kid needs. Katie tweeted, grades are both necessary for standards, accountability, and feedback, unless schools can embrace more progressive forms of feedback, like narrative reports and conferences. As a Philadelphia teacher, I feel strongly that we have to acknowledge how inequity skews our grading system during COVID time. We're discussing how to fairly evaluate students during the pandemic, and we'll hear more from our guests and from you in a moment. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
We're only months away from Election Day, and every week, or even every few hours, there's a new twist that could affect who will win the White House. To keep up with the latest, tune in to the NPR Politics Podcast every day to find out what happened and what it means for the election.
We're talking about grades with Mariah Balingit of The Washington Post, education professor Jack Schneider of UMass Lowell, and Tanji Reed Marshall of the Education Trust. So, Jack, if offering letter grades is a flawed practice, as you suggested in a recent op-ed for the New York Times, what are some examples of a better system?
Well, I'll give you two. One would be restoring the communicative function inside classrooms. Right now, when teachers give a grade to students, it communicates almost no information at all, right? What does a student learn other than my future has been compromised by this grade? So actually removing grades entirely is an important step in terms of restoring that communicative function. I teach at a university where I work with PhD students, and many of them are still in the habit of flipping to the back of their work, checking the grade, and stuffing it into their binders. These are, you know, hard wired practices by the time that students get to higher education, and it really undermines learning. And then a second would be actually building out a system of portfolios. And this is something that's happening at the high school level. And there's actually a move to use portfolios for college admissions. And that may sound sort of outrageous and impossible to scale up. But, you know, the AP program, for all its flaws, does use portfolios for things like studio art. It's not inconceivable to imagine that students over the course of their high school careers, or even before that, would be compiling these exemplars of what they know and can do, that they would be motivated to actually learn things in order to display it in these exemplars of their work, and that actually this would reduce a lot of the pressure to get good grades, because students would have multiple opportunities to revise their work, to update their portfolios. Grades, once given, are forever recorded, and that makes grades a really high-stakes enterprise, and it really distracts students from learning, and it focuses them entirely on, you know, gaming a metric. And as we've talked about already, that really privileges the most advantaged in our society, who are best situated to engage in such gaming. Alternatively, we can imagine a system where students have multiple opportunities to revise and improve their work until eventually they're able to show, hey, this is what I can do.
Well, we heard from a former teacher, Star Saxstein. She taught in the New York City public schools and integrated the practice of, quote, ungrading into her classroom.
After 5 or 6 years of being in the high school English classroom, I had figured out that grades weren't serving my students as well as they could. They certainly weren't communicating learning in the way that I thought they should. There were too many other factors that were involved that often took the focus off of what kids knew and could do. So what I started to do was remove the grades from every assignment and started giving really, really specific strategic feedback that allowed students to set goals, and then they would reflect on their learning after they did it, helping me understand what they were working on specifically. And from there, I was able to read their finished work through the lens of their reflection. And what that helped me do was, again, provide more specific differentiated instruction based on the specific goals students had. From there, students had their portfolios that allowed them to select the work that best showed their learning. And in this way, I got rid of traditional testing, which also gave them multiple opportunities to show what they knew in different ways. Also, when report cards came around, because that was still expected, we did grading conferences where students would come to me with their portfolio and we would have a conversation about their learning, and then together we would decide upon what grade would go on the report card based on their level of mastery for that marking period.
So it sounds close to what you're describing, Jack. Tanji, what do you think about an approach like that? It could provide targeted feedback, better ways for students, parents, and teachers to communicate. Is that workable?
I think it is workable, and I commend her for taking such an approach to learning. And one thing I want to say is our system is actually not broken. It is getting the designed results. And so we are seeing the evidence of what has been structured into the system. But looking at what this teacher just said, she provided detailed, specific feedback on learning. She invited the students into the conversation regarding their own progress and their own understanding. But at the end of the day, because the system is what the system is, she still had to put a grade on something. And so all of that is saying, yes, we have these structures in place and we want students to develop agency, educative agency. We want them empowered and voicing their position on what they want to learn, what they can do, where they need support. And until we are ready to say that a grade does not define a child, then can we say we are all right with dispensing with a grade altogether? Because if we listen to what she shared, she went through all of the right processes, right, that we agree have been discussed and shared on this conversation, but she still had to come down to a finite thing. It was meaningful because it brought students into the process, but we have to decide that we're going to use that process or not. Absolutely, we need something to help students understand where they are with their learning. Parents must be part of the conversation, and the system has to decide how we will look at children and what it means to put a label on something that is so fluid as learning. And when we put those labels on it, it becomes a finite, fixed thing when we know from research and practices that learning is always contextual and on a trajectory. So we have to make some critical decisions about what we are trying to do and say about kid learning.
Mariah, as someone who covers education, I mean, how heavy of a lift would it be to move to this kind of system nationwide when you have each state really doing its own thing?
Well, I'm actually more thinking about the fact that there's so many teachers out there that just have an overwhelming number of students, sometimes 30 and 40 students per class, and they're already struggling under our current system that sort of dispenses with this personalized approach. They're already struggling to evaluate students. So I think there's a lot that needs to happen. But one of the other things I wanted to say, and I'm lucky because I just get to ask the questions, I don't have to answer them. But this pandemic is really raising some bigger esoteric questions, like what is the purpose of school and how does grading fit into that? You know, the purpose of school is not to do well on the SATs. It's not to get a good transcript. But we know that you need those things if you want to advance to the next level. You know, I don't recall anything that I learned in calculus, but I think that it was really valuable to do those things. And it was valuable to take the AP exam because I learned how to study. I learned how to, you know, keep at something. So I think, again, the other thing that I wanted to say about that teacher's approach that I find really interesting is that's the same approach, you know, if you're a writer or a journalist, that's the same approach you go through with an editor to produce the best possible work. It's a back and forth. It's working on the things that you might not be so good at. It's really aimed at making the student the best writer that he or she can be, rather than evaluating their worthiness for college. So I find that, you know, the notion that grades are the only thing that can motivate a student, I think is sort of incorrect. I mean, for it is, in our current system, it is probably the best motivator. But the idea that a student couldn't take personal pride in their work and want to make it good for themselves is something that we haven't really considered enough.
How likely do you think the changes we've seen in grading during the pandemic will last? Is this the start of a genuine conversation about changing the way we approach education and assessment of students?
You know, I've really stopped trying to predict what's going to happen because everything is so uncertain. But I think that this is going to fundamentally, I think the pandemic in so many ways is going to fundamentally change education. And in many cases, unfortunately, for the worst, because we're going to have so many kids who are going to fall further and further behind. But we're already seeing, I wanted to mention too, when it comes to assessments, state assessments that they're required to submit, required to do for the federal government under the new No Child Left Behind law, there are already states that are asking to be waived from that. I definitely think that there is going to be a reevaluation of how we do this, and hopefully it will be an evaluation that will result in a more equitable system, a system that will allow low-income children and children of color to be put on a more level playing field.
Tanji, I'm going to give you the last word here really quickly. Any words of advice for parents who are listening and trying to figure out how they're going to get through the next few months?
Yes. Ask lots of questions. find ways to partner with your child's teacher and be involved as much as you possibly can to get a sense of the expectations, the standards, the quality of assignments being asked, and how your child is going to be evaluated this year. That's a critical question. So ask those questions, get involved, stay connected, and involve your child too. Ask them what their hopes and dreams are for this very precarious and uncertain school year.
That's Tanji Reed Marshall, Director of Preschool through 12th Grade Education at the Education Trust. Jack Schneider is an Assistant Professor of Leadership and Education at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. And Mariah Balingit is a National Education Reporter with The Washington Post. Today's conversation was produced by Gabrielle Healy and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks so much for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.